Welcome to Webinar Wednesday. Today is Wednesday, March the 13th, 2019. And my name is Aaron Lurie. I'm the Director of Professional Learning here at NAESP. In today's webinar, everyone is coming to the webinar series as muted. So please put your questions in the chat box for our speaker today. The topic today for our Webinar Wednesdays is Essential Elements, Recruitment and Retention of High Quality Staff. Our speaker for today is Kelly Coas Johnson. She is the Executive Director for American Association of School Personnel Administrators, better known as AASPA. Kelly, how are you today?
I am fabulous. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Absolutely. So I am, as stated, I'm the Executive Director of AASPA. We are an association for K-12 HR directors. We've been in existence since 1938. I'm really excited to share we celebrated our 80th annual conference last year. Our goal is to provide leadership and professional development and resources for those in education and in particular human capital leadership positions, which does include principals. So it's a great topic. I'm very happy to be here with all of you today, and I'm super excited.
Well, I know everybody's interested in this topic on, again, that retention and staff of staff. So I'll hand it over to you, Kelly.
Absolutely. So today, this is a presentation that I have edited quite a bit, and I try to keep it up to date. I have presented it to both HR directors and superintendents and principals. And so in today's presentation, I'm going to cover three main things. We're going to talk about why we're here, which, and when I say why we're here, I'm talking about the teacher shortage that we do have going on. I'm going to talk a little bit about what I've seen nationwide in my position. So I've been the executive director for AASPA for a little over 5 years. I feel like I have the best job in the world because I get to travel to different states and learn about what kind of issues are facing their human capital leaders and principals and superintendents and school boards with regards to teacher recruitment and retention and discipline and you name it. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what I've seen in some different states legislatively. And then most importantly, we're going to end by talking about some 7 strategies of things that we can kind of do about it. So what can you as principals do with regards to recruitment and retention of your high quality staff? This presentation does fall under the Professional Human Capital Leaders in Education Standards. I'll visit about that a little bit towards the end, but we do actually have standards out there for HR, K-12 HR. So we're gonna kind of lead off with that. So here we go. I want to be clear and let you know that when we talk about reasons that I believe that we are here with a teacher shortage, you know, a lot of people want to put teacher pay number one off the list. And kind of what I want to talk about is some other reasons that I think are actually ahead of teacher pay. And I certainly don't disagree that teacher pay is one of the number one reasons, but in today's presentation, I'm going to tell you it's not my number one reason. So the first reason I give for why we're here is this declining interest in the profession. So according to the survey by the American Association of State Colleges and Universities, they talk about the number one reason for their enrollment dropping. So this would be your teachers who are going into the study of education. And I'm going to share some statistics about how badly that is dropping, but they say that the number one reason that they're given is the perception of teaching as an undesirable career. And so if you don't go away with anything, I hope that you go away with understanding that it is all of our responsibility to level up the perception of teaching as a fabulous career. Education is a wonderful place to be. It has been and it always will be. And it's our job to make sure that we're talking about the positive aspects of education and not just the negative ones. And that's a really big order to fill. I know that I work a lot with our associations like NAESP, secondary school principals, superintendents about how do we do this? And it's really difficult to talk about teaching in a positive light sometimes when you turn on the news and we are hearing a lot of negative things that are happening. And I just hope that we work on that as a group of educators together. Number two on the list is the declining enrollment in the teacher training programs. So that kind of goes hand in hand with reason number one. But the statistics that they're giving are that between 08, 09, and 12, 13, that we saw almost a 30% decrease in people going into the training programs for education. And if you drill deeper into special education or math, that number actually increases significantly. A bullet that I put down here is a disconnect between training and district needs. You know, I kind of laugh about this because I've given this presentation to a group of employment educators, education employment educators, which would be the folks that are at the universities that are helping put teachers in your classroom. And when I tell them that I believe that there's a disconnect between, you know, in your case, the principals and them, they look at me like I'm crazy. And then I ask the question, when was the last time you had a discussion with a principal about what their needs are going to be in the next 2 years with regards to teachers? And that none of them raised their hand, so they're not having those discussions with building leaders. And so I encourage you as principals to foster those relationships with your teacher prep programs in your colleges and universities, especially if they're in the same city as you, you know, and talk to them about that. The next topic that I want to talk about is the Chronicle of Higher Education. This was a phenomenal study that was given by UCLA over 5 decades. They surveyed incoming freshman classes, and I loved this because you can kind of see what is happening with regards to history. So in 2003, we saw a great percentage of incoming freshmen that were going into education, 10.02%. You can see a drastic decline between that time and 2013. And I always like to ask the audience, does anybody know why? For the sake of time, I'm going to kind of answer it for you. And that is the recession. So in 2003, I was traveling in my state association doing reduction in force workshops. We must have done probably 4 or 5 a year. And we did that for about 2 or 3 years, figuring out how we could do reduction in force to our teachers at that time because we had a surplus, right? And so we've just really never been able to recover from that. But I'm happy to report, I actually recently pulled the data that they had out for 2016. We are recovering. It's just really, really, really slow. So if you like this, I highly encourage you to follow UCLA's study. It is nationwide. It's not just their college, so that kind of works. Number three is with regards to teacher retention and turnover. I will tell you that ASPA, as a national association, that this is going to be where we put a lot of our resources with regards to human capital leadership. And that's going to be in teacher retention and turnover. So this is the statistics on this are probably scarier than even the statistics of folks that are going into the study of education. So you can see that in 2012, 16% of teachers left their districts. Half of these folks left the profession altogether. And about 30% of new teachers leave the occupation within their first 5 years. So what this tells me is that we have not done a great job of caring and feeding for our new teachers. So the first 5 years of a new teacher in your building is so critical, because if you can't foster and care and love them and grow them, then not only are you going to lose a teacher for your building, you're probably just going to lose a teacher in education altogether. some would argue the 5-year mark is where maybe you don't want them. But I got to tell you that those days of being able to say, if you can't make it, then I don't want you, those are kind of over, especially when we talk about the teacher shortage. We have to put way more resources and energy into those first 5-year teachers to help bring them back up to speed versus just saying, if you don't get it in 5 years, you're just not ever going to get it. These numbers are pulled from an ERIC file, which I gave you a link to at the bottom. I think that this is really phenomenal information. If you need to present on teacher retention and turnover to any groups, this is a great resource to pull from. Teacher turnover is highest in the South and lowest in the Northeast. I always think that that's pretty fascinating. Teachers of color have a higher turnover rate, 19% versus 15%. And then 51% of teachers report more manageable workloads. I think this is kind of stuff that we can argue that's certainly happening. That last little speck of data is about the millennials, and 91% of them not expecting to stay in a job for less than 3 years. I'm about ready to take that particular bullet off of my presentation because they're now starting to do more studies with millennials, and what they're finding is that it's not that they're job hoppers. They actually will stay in a job for a long time. You just have to constantly be challenging them and constantly be giving them new opportunities to grow and develop. So as we start getting a little bit further on with millennials, I think we're going to see some of that. So I had a question about why do I think that there's a disparity in the regions? I think that it's probably a little bit of pay. And as we get to studying some of the states, you're going to see some shocking stuff about minimum or new teacher salaries and how it differs from state to state. So we'll kind of talk about that. Okay. So I also love this data because if you're trying to argue for why maybe you should put some resources towards teacher retention, this is why, because it costs so much to replace a teacher. So the Learning Policy Institute has come out with some wonderful data on how much it costs to replace a teacher every year, $4.9 billion a year for replacing teachers who transfer schools. And you can even drill that down district data-wise, and how much it costs in a rural area versus a large district. The big disparity is coming from how small districts and large districts recruit. So if you go to those really big teacher fairs, you're going to see really, really big districts. So they will hire someone to fly across the country, go to giant teacher fairs, recruit all over the place. A rural district doesn't have those funds, so their money is being spent differently to recruit in a smaller area. So that's the disparity on that. But if you go to that study on the Learning Policy Institute, you can pull some really specific data about your region of the country, even your state, and how much it costs to replace a teacher where you're from. Okay. Okay, so here's the big, big reason that everybody likes to talk about. The news likes to talk about it. Everybody on the street that I run into wants to talk about it. Everybody thinks that the biggest problem and why we are having a hard time recruiting and retaining teachers is pay. And I'm here to tell you that money is not going to solve all of our problems. And there's a much bigger issue with regards to teacher recruitment and retention that doesn't have anything to do with pay. And those three things that I talked about before pay are where we're at with that. So what I do want you to take away from is that I do want you as principals and educators to know how your state compares to other states. Because if you are out, you are always recruiting as a principal. And I think it's important for you to know where you stand in the scheme of things. So that if you are on vacation somewhere and you run into somebody that's about ready to finish their degree in education and they say, I'm thinking about, I don't know where I want to go, you can be very confident of saying, you know what, this is how much my state and my district pays incoming teachers versus how much you're going to get paid as an incoming teacher in another state. And that can really sway somebody to come to your district. It also allows them to trust you and the knowledge you have. Pay is also about the healthcare costs. You know, I didn't put West Virginia in a slide, but West Virginia is a really interesting example. They did increase significantly their teacher pay, but what the media is not presenting is the fact that almost all of that got eaten up with healthcare costs. Because when they went to negotiate, all they negotiated was the pay. They didn't take into account the rising healthcare costs. And West Virginia is a state where everybody uses the same healthcare plan. You can't go out, and seek out different plans for your teachers. Everybody has the same plan in the state. So they kind of made a little bit of a spoof there when they didn't take that into account when they were looking for their big teacher raises and their walkouts. So what I'm going to talk about next is kind of what I've seen, and the data is pretty clear that we have a big problem with teacher pay, but unfortunately the solution is super slow, where those other three reasons that I give, we can do things about those like today. So that's kind of fun to do that. Okay. I love this slide. I pull this data from WalletHub, and I do that because as you look at millennials and recruiting kind of younger generations, this would be a site that a lot of younger people go to. My teenage kids go to this because they like to find out the best places to do A, B, and C, and WalletHub has almost everything you can think about. They have a list of 2018's best and worst, and they have a whole section on education. Highest annual salaries, adjusted for cost of living, which is kind of rare to find those, and lowest annual salaries. And here's what I want to tell you is that I have board members and members from Illinois, Michigan, West Virginia, Vermont. I haven't talked to any of my members from Hawaii very often, but I have those as well. And here's the point is that when they get together and when we talk about the topic of the teacher shortage and retaining quality staff, the issues are all the same. So highest annual salary states like Michigan are still struggling just like Vermont. And they are having the same problems finding teachers, especially in those high need areas like special education, et cetera. The lowest projected teacher turnover, I think that's kind of interesting data too. And the highest projected teacher turnover, Kentucky, Montana, Missouri, Indiana, Virginia, Arizona. I don't have a lot of reasons why, at least I don't have any reasons that I can back up with a lot of data, but I just think it's interesting to probably know where your state falls in some of that too. Okay, so now I'm going to move on really briefly about some different things that I have seen that I think will probably shock some of you. If you are from some of these states that I'm talking about, please, please feel free to talk up in the chat box and let me know. I'm from Oklahoma, and I agree or I disagree, or if you've got some more data to share, I'd be happy to pass that along through the webinar. So Oklahoma was really interesting. So they were kind of the first state to have the walkouts, and that's when we were just calling them walkouts and we weren't calling them strikes yet. But in Oklahoma, in 14-15, they actually cut 850, they cut their classes, 850 classes. And they did say, oh, but don't worry, we're gonna add $400 million to raise teacher salary, but it never happened. So they made a promise, didn't happen. Then they actually had to go to 4-day school weeks in some districts. They still promised to add pay increases, even though they had a $1.3 billion deficit in the state. That didn't happen. They ended up passing a bill in 2017 allowing retired teachers to return to the classroom with no salary caps. They were able to retain their retirement benefits and no sit-out time. So that is something I think that we're going to see a little bit more of as we move on for some states that are really, really struggling. Oklahoma happens to be a state that has a huge teacher deficiency. So they had a massive amount of emergency certificates. And then, of course, they had their teacher walkout. The teacher walkout worked because they had a bill that proposed to increase teacher pay. And then over 6 years, they were hoping to put in raises of 34.18% to 50.85%. Here's what's interesting. I'm not very sure that this is probably going to be sustainable. Oklahoma has a really weird state, and their funding system is tied directly to their oil economy. So as long as oil prices are where they're supposed to be, they might be able to pull this off. They have a bad year. They're going to be in trouble. So I think it was great that they did it. I just don't think they put in some provisions as far as how to maintain it. There was a petition to overturn it, but I understand that that has not been successful. So that is super great. Next, we've got California is a really fun state to follow just because of their size. Again, this is another state that they have continually put out bills to help their teacher retention and their teacher recruitment. And every year those bills get turned down. Where they have turned to is loan forgiveness, which has worked a little bit. They put in another bill that would match grants for kind of grow your own residency programs. But anything with regards to pay just was DOA, dead on arrival. In 2017, the only bill, even though they had about a dozen or so that actually came out to get signed into law, had to do with districts being able to use surplus property and turn it into employee housing. And I'm thinking, that's the only bill they got out of your state this year. And then what did we see? So now we've got two teacher strikes in this year alone, one of them in LA and one of them in Oakland. So both North and South California. So I think what we're seeing is that people are kind of tired of empty promises and no action from their state government and legislation. Indiana is huge for me. It's a state that we kind of follow. It's a little bit shaky, but they did pass a bill March of 2018 to allow schools to fill up to 10% of their group with teaching staff with unlicensed teachers, which obviously as educators, this should panic all of us, right? So yes, they have to have a degree. Yes, they had to have teaching experience, but they didn't have to pass what we would call maybe the praxis. And so I thought that was really fascinating. I think we're going to see a lot of this. I think that if they can't get bills passed on maybe pay or reciprocity, that they're going to start passing bills to loosen up who can and cannot be a teacher. And one of those might be to lower their standards with their teaching praxis exam. I had a question here that says, do I think that California teacher strikes are proving an effective method for teacher use to get better pay? You know, it varies from state to state. In California, I think that the answer is yes, it was very effective for the teachers. They immobilized themselves like nothing I had ever seen. In particular in LA, if you watched the news, every single teacher said the exact same thing every time. Now, the other thing they did is that they didn't fight just for pay. They were fighting for class size. And if you look, that was kind of a mistake, I think, that a lot of the early on strikes is that they didn't talk about class size. They didn't talk about all the other issues. So in California, I was super impressed with the teachers unions and how well organized they got together to get their point across. California's going to have the same problem everybody else does, and that's sustainability. And if they don't get their healthcare costs under control, they're going to be in big, big trouble. So Washington was an interesting state. You know, they actually didn't do strikes, but they have this Supreme Court decision that basically shot $7.3 billion into their state, you know, just to help with education. And many teachers unions actually went back to the table. They had settled and everything, but then they actually said, nope, we're not going to do it. and they went back and insisted that they get a 15% pay hike, even though they'd already negotiated. Again, they should not have just come out of the gate with that. They're going to have a really hard time with sustainability there. But here's the thing I want you to notice. They're going to have a statewide average salary of $71,000. So think about that. Arizona, another state that did a walkout. I would say probably Arizona has been the most successful that I've seen. They were able to secure 20% pay raises, and they've kind of kept themselves quiet since then. And I think that's kind of key too. Don't have a strike and then 6 months later go and have another one. You know, West Virginia, I think that's going to bite them in the tail when it's all said and done. This piece is really important, I think. Six states, Arizona, Florida, Hawaii, Mississippi, Missouri, Nevada, they're offering full teacher license reciprocity for people to teach in their state. And this is probably the one question I ask when I go to a state immediately is I say, how are your reciprocity laws? Because if you are from a state where your reciprocity laws are super, super tight, you're going to be in big trouble later when you go to recruit. If you're from a state where maybe you're loosening up reciprocity, that's a great thing. And when I talk to state leadership groups, I say, if you want to look at a good topic to talk to your legislators about, as long as you're okay with it, reciprocity is a great place to start, because before you start going down that road of teacher pay, you can look at, are we really opening and welcoming to other teachers from other states? And you need to figure that out, because that's a really good recruitment tool for you if you know where your state falls with reciprocity. All right, so now we're going to get into some great things. These are the seven strategies for recruitment and hiring. There's lots of strategies. These are just the seven I picked that I thought we could do in the period of time that we have. I'm going to go fast on a couple, and then we're going to spend some good time on a few others. So embrace data. So this is really good for our K-12 folks, and I think it's really good for principals. I think that there are some great programs out there that your district may even have, or there's even some free programs through Department of Education that will help you do a market analysis of your local labor market. I think it's important for you as a principal to know what a teacher in your neighboring district is going to make. What is their husband and wife going to potentially make if they are, if they're going to come and move to your town and maybe work at a factory or the hospital that you have. Many districts are doing compensation studies with surrounding districts, but they're not doing compensation studies with other jobs in that particular area. So I think that that's important. The other piece of data that I think principals need to embrace, and that's your satisfaction survey. I used to work for a principals association, and we did some amazing work with climate and culture studies. Those were all super student-based, and I think that it's important that you're spending as much time on your teacher climate and culture pieces as well as your student climate and culture pieces. Exit interviews is a really good place to start too. And then a new survey that we're really encouraging some of our folks to do, because we talked early on about that first 5-year teacher, is that after you have a teacher that started with you, after they've been with you a year, think about giving them a super simple survey, asking them about their first year experience as far as onboarding goes and mentoring, things like that. And so we've put out to our members a lot of resources on some of those really simple surveys that they can give some of their teachers. Okay, grow your own strategies. These are huge. And listen, as a principal, these are things that you can be doing, and even as an elementary principal. And it goes back to that elevating the profession of teaching, no matter what you do. We've seen some amazing things happen in states with tuition reimbursement programs, which can be coupled with your grow your own strategies. The easiest grow your own strategy that you can do in a building level is your paraprofessionals, your teacher's aides, and your parent volunteers. Find out where they are at in their educational life, in their professional career plan. It can be something simple as a conversation, or it can be something a little bit more specific like a survey. But I think it's important for you to know in your building where your potential next teachers could come from. And if you've got some paraprofessionals in your building and you've never asked them, hey, do you want to be a teacher someday? You better be asking them those things, because I think that that's really, really important. Because we need to do a better job of helping our current teachers grow, as well as our paraprofessionals, et cetera. Okay, incentive programs for high school students who come back to teach in your district. I've seen some super cool things. These are sometimes funded by your PTA or your different grant programs at districts. But they're saying that if you went to school in said district and you come back to teach, we'll actually give you some kind of a stipend or some kind of a prize. You know, some states can't do signing bonuses, so they'll call it something else. But they're doing some really creative things with incentive programs for those that'll come back and work in their home district where they grew up and where they lived. The online recruiting efforts. So this is one I want to spend a little bit more time on, because I have to say, of all the professional association education groups I work with, the best social media presence folks are principals. So way to go, principals. You got this social media stuff down. You are running circles around some of my HR directors and a lot of superintendents for sure. And principals really are where it's at when it comes to social media. This is the words I tell my HR folks. Love it, hate it, you have to do it. It helps in recruiting the younger generation. It also helps in promoting from within, etc. I love it. And if you're in a district that is social media friendly, then I'm hoping that you as a principal are feeling confident about tweeting out the job openings that you have, maybe even pushing it a little bit harder. Again, when we talk about the fact that our teachers are not going to come from the areas that they used to come from. So the olden days, I like to call it, when you were looking for a teacher, you would go out and you would go to a college or a university and you would say, give me your best recruits. And they would say, here you go. And then you got to sit behind a desk and you got to say, I like you, I don't like you, I like you, I don't like you. Those days are kind of over, and so you have to look elsewhere for your future teachers. And social media is a great place to start because, again, past students, parents, community members, spouses of community members, you name it, they're on social media for usually for your school district, and they're following you as a principal because you're posting cool stuff about what's happening in the schools and the art programs and the sporting programs, that you are a great place to start when it comes to recruiting. And so know your school's brand, know your limitations, but you need to be a human capital leader and start putting out those recruitment pieces on your social media along with all those great student things. The partnerships, you know, I am a big believer that the partnerships with the communities should not just be with central office or with the superintendents. I think that building, if you go building by building, you each have your own challenges and your own strengths, and you should be really free and able to talk about that. So I want you to know your district's strengths and challenges, and I want you to feel free to engage business and community with what those are, because they're going to help you. So if you go to your local hospital and you say, and you become friends with the higher ups there, you can let them know maybe where you're struggling with some recruitment or some retention problems, and you would be really shocked and surprised at what they're going to come back and tell you. and how they're going to give you some leads and some advice on maybe how to handle some of your recruitment and your retention problems. Figure out where your state sets with alternative certification and start making those connections with the alternative certification programs in your state. I gave you a website that you can check, and you can see how easy it is for people to get alternative certification in your state. If you're not super familiar with it yet, this is a great place to start so that when you are out there recruiting and retaining, you can tell folks how they can get their alternative certification if that works for them. Also, I love this. Work with your benefits provider on hiring incentive, referrals, etc. I know working with elementary school principals, you've got groups out there like Horace Mann and Aetna, which they will actually help you. If they are your benefits provider, they will help you put some really cool things together for hiring, or maybe a program even for those first five-year teachers, since, again, we know that those are kind of the hard ones to keep around and take care of. And then leverage support from the regional service centers. This one is probably more for your superintendents and your HR directors than it is for you guys. But if you have service centers that are doing some really cool things, you should probably at least know what those are. I love this. Approximately 18% of public school teachers in 15-16 had entered teacher through an alternative route certification program. So we're going to see that number go up, you know, right, for alternative certification as maybe some laws change. And I found that this data was really interesting. Higher percentages of alternative route teachers were black versus Hispanic versus white. And so I think that that's really interesting data. If you are having a diversity problem in your district, that's maybe where you need to start looking for some help. Okay, stipends. This is always a hard slide because I talk to a lot of states that say, I can't give stipends. I can't give siting bonuses. They don't exist in my state. And, you know, I get it, okay? There are some different unique ways and some different things that you can do. If you are, say, from a rural district and you don't offer signing bonuses, what you can do, and again, this is leveraging partnerships, go to your local bank and figure out what kind of programs the local bank could potentially offer new teachers coming to your community. I love that. I also gave a link here for a program that was a substitute incentive pay. That's out of Nebraska. Nebraska doesn't do signing bonuses. So that's someplace you can kind of check and see how they did that. I also love it when districts can look at housing programs. So housing is kind of a hard sell for a lot of groups. So what they've been doing is going to the local leaders that do apartment complexes or maybe have rentals. Believe me, a landlord wants to rent to a new teacher. They love that. So go to them and say, is there something you can offer discounted for new teachers coming to my community? So those are some great ideas for stipends or bonuses of some kind. Leadership training, I put this one in there because it's something that I feel really passionate about, and I'm constantly telling my HR leaders that we have got to do a better job of building our teacher leaders, and we have to give more autonomy to our principals. We have to support our principals as human capital leaders in their building, in their districts, because that's what they're doing. Giving you as principals the ability to hire early. In return, what you have to be doing is knowing what your needs are earlier. Keeping a really good handle on who's going to be leaving your buildings and making sure that you're communicating that to your HR department if you are so lucky to have one. Telling them, I know that in 2 years I'm going to have this many vacancies. Opening up that applicant pool to you, having you have the ability to look at candidates, and of course that whole adage of stop moving around the poor teachers. stop giving the worst teachers to the best principals because they think you can fix them. Because sometimes it's not about fixing them. It's about just having the right person in the bus, right? So we're big on that. That is something that we're really promoting to our HR directors and our assistant superintendents, is helping principals get the skills for hiring, recruitment, retention, everything from marketing, branding, to incentive pay, and figuring out all of those things. So consider, you know, brushing up on your PD on those topics. This one is my favorite slide. It's about communicating your brand and marketing. Again, this is super important for principals to establish a brand. Your district should have it. If your district doesn't have a brand, then by God, you as a building, you go for it. You need to have a brand. You need to have a reason for people to come to your webpage, to visit your social media pages. The brand should help potential employees understand your culture and your values. You are your district, and everything you do and everything that comes out of your office needs to be branded. So this means your slogan, your Twitter handle, your website, everything, because everybody's heard this statement. If you're not telling your employment story, somebody else is. Which brings me to websites. So if you don't do anything after this presentation, I want you to do a couple of things with regards to your website. I want you to go to your building level website and find out if you have a jobs tab on it. I know that it may have to go to the central office, but do you have a jobs tab on the home page of your school building website? Are you sharing your mission statement and vision? Do you currently list job openings at your district? Again, on your building website. You know, even if it's a redirect, that's fine, but it has to be big and bold, because me as a parent, if I might be looking at a career change, might be looking at a move, I'm going to not go to the district's website. I'm probably going to go to the elementary or the middle school or the high school that my kid's going to go to's website. And I need to be able to see that, oh my gosh, they're hiring. This goes not only for your teachers, but your cafeteria and your classified staff, you name it. I also encourage our districts to have the housing information, salary schedule, might as well post it. Everybody knows your business. And the key people to reach. So this is huge for me. It's not usually so much a problem with principals, but it's something I really harp on my HR leaders for. Nothing irks me more than when you go to a website to find the director of HR or the HR department, and you can't find an email, you can't find a picture, you can't find a name, but you can find a little form to fill out that says submit here. I hate that more than anything else in the world. So make sure you're not that person. Make sure you're accessible, because again, if we're going to elevate the profession, then this is a key place to start. Okay, your next job that you have to do, and I do want you to do this, and I also want you to ask your secretary to do it, because I think it's really important. Go to your district, and I want you to fill out a job application, because many of us have not filled out a job application in our own district or in our own jobs for a really long time, because we haven't had to, right? Here's the key. You can't help those new recruits if you don't know how to do it yourself. And the same thing goes with your secretary. Do you seriously want to lose a teacher because they didn't know how to fill out the application and nobody would help them because they didn't know either? This is, again, huge. Back in the olden days, we had the opportunity to say, oh, well, if you don't know how to fill out a job application, then I don't want you working for my school. Those days are over. You have to be able to care and feed for those, for that group of people. Because just because your application is the most complicated thing on the planet doesn't mean that they're not going to be the best teacher you ever hired or you ever had teacher kiddos. So I want you to go fill that application out. And then when you run across a potential teacher that doesn't know how to do it, you know how to do it and you can help them. And the same thing goes for your secretary to do that too. Okay. I'm going to actually back up one here really quick. I had another question on here about a GoFundMe account. I got to be honest with you. I have not heard of a school district using a GoFundMe account. This would probably scare me to death, because I'm going to guess that there's some pretty significant legal implications for who's in charge of that money. So who sets it up? If a district sets it up, that puts them in a pretty sticky situation, and a principal setting it up could put themselves in a pretty sticky situation. So I would probably not be in favor of a GoFundMe account. But I absolutely am in favor of you utilizing your PTA for setting up anything that could help along those lines. But, okay. So before then, maybe we open it up to some other questions, because I'm about at 3:45. I will tell you, because I promised that what we have is Human Capital Leaders and Education Standards. These are open source and free to anybody who would like them. These are standards that we think you should know as a human capital leader in education. So if you are heavily involved in the recruitment and the retention of your highly qualified staff, you should go out potentially and look at these standards for human capital leadership. The standards focus on four main sections: strategic staffing, talent management and development, cultural and total rewards, and performance excellence. So it's really good stuff to know. It comes with a whole list of competencies. And you can utilize those any way you want. That's kind of what the wheel and the standards look like. I gave you guys a link to access these if you're ever interested in that. So, okay, so we had a question about how should a principal work with their PTA to recruit or retain staff. So the easiest thing that you can do is utilize those partnerships. So you need to let your PTA know if you are struggling with a significant teacher shortage problem. Now, I want to tell you that I did a similar presentation at the Elementary School Principals Conference as well as at the Secondary School Principals Conference, and I was kind of surprised to learn that I had a lot of elementary principals that came up to me afterwards and said, "We don't have a teacher shortage problem right now." And I said, "Oh, you're so lucky, but it's coming." So if you're not having one right now, because you are correct, the new folks that are coming into education, 9 times out of 10, they are going into elementary education, which has left that a little less vulnerable than some other areas in education. But it doesn't mean that you don't have one or you're not going to have one. The teacher shortage is going to trickle down and affect everybody. And so I think it's important that you put all the data on the table that you have. And that means to your PTA. So letting them know, we have a job opening, we're not getting applicants, or we're only getting 2 applicants or 3 applicants. They then can turn around and kind of put that out to more people and more communities. And again, we're kind of over the time where we would have secrets, right? Maybe there was a time that you didn't want the community to know that you only had 3 applications for a particular position, but it is what it is. And I think that the more you share with your group, such as PTA and community, the better off you're going to be. So do utilize them. Let them know what your weaknesses are, and let them know what you're really, really good at. So that's really important. Can principals recruit student teachers? Yes, 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 yes. I think that that's a great idea for you to do. So if you know of student teachers and you've got a good relationship with your HR department or your super, you know, whoever's helping you with that, I definitely think you should. Principals should recruit 24/7. You know, another talk is that whole, remember, you're always on stage and you are always on stage as a principal. When you're at the gym, you're recruiting. When you're on vacation, you're recruiting. When you're down at the local restaurant having dinner with your family and you think you're having private time, you're recruiting. So every chance you get, yes, you should be doing that. And if you know of student teachers, you should be doing that. Absolutely. Okay, next question. How can a principal, or what can a principal do to keep their teachers from being stolen by a better paying district? So this one is tough, and you know, even my HR directors tease each other about, I can't believe you took this teacher. You know, first and foremost, it's about the culture. So if you have a district that is an amazing place to work, it's not, the pay's not gonna matter. So they're gonna tell you that they're leaving you for pay, but ultimately, they'll either come back or they won't leave you because of the culture that you have at your district. I will just tell you, so for those of you that don't know, I'm actually on vacation and I'm in Disney World. I talked to a guy today in Disney World who has worked for this company for 17 years and he loves his job so much, and I actually interviewed him because I'm doing a talk on employee engagement. And did you know he's hourly? And I said, how on earth are you still working at a company hourly? Are they paying you really, really well? And he said, absolutely not. I get paid terrible, but I love working for this company so much. And I love the opportunities and the way that they recognize me, good recognition programs. I love that if there's opportunities, they let me have them. They tell me about them first, and it's not about the pay for him. So what I'm telling you is that if you lose a teacher to another district because of pay, then you need to be ready and willing to talk about what do you have to offer that's not just pay, right? What's your recognition program look like? And also, if you've got data on your own retention, you should be sharing that when you recruit the student teachers as well. Things like that. Okay. I'm doing great on time. I have a little bit more time for questions.
Yes, you do. I had a question for you.
Okay.
Can you give example of how a principal could actually make their environment more welcoming for these teachers? Because again, if the teachers have the passion, the pay wouldn't really count. But what are some tips that you could share for principals to make their environment more, you know, attractive for these teachers?
Absolutely. So the first thing I always say is that it's all about customer service. It is all about customer service. And we're turning, education is turning into a service excellence industry. So everything you have to do needs to revolve around service excellence. So things like I said, making sure that you help a teacher fill out an application. There's no stupid questions. And it all kind of starts with your front office staff. Again, the days of you being able to say, it's on the website, those are over. You can't do that anymore. Being open and friendly, and you know, walk into your office tomorrow and see what the first thing that a new recruit is going to see when they walk into your office. What's it going to smell like? What's it going to look like? Who's going to greet me at the door? And is that person cranky? And if they are, you got to move them to the back office, and you got to move somebody happy to the front office, because that will speak miles to new recruits. Because if they're going next door and they're getting that, it doesn't matter what you're paying.
That's true. That is true. All right. Do we have any more questions in the chat box? Because Kelly is time is almost up, but we definitely take a few more questions.
Sure. A question came in, and it's kind of a strange one, but do you have any strategies for working with, like, crazy teachers? Like, you know, in terms of not just hiring, but, you know, either working with them and making sure you've got the right culture.
You bet. So there's, you know, you've got crazy good and crazy bad, right? So if you've got the crazy good teachers, you need to figure out a way to use them in the right place, right? If you're talking, so I always talk about you, we all have those teachers that they almost love your school district too much, right? They almost like over recruit for you. And, unfortunately, you got to find a nice place for them, right? There's got to be a place for them. And maybe that's with your PTA. The crazy bad teachers, there's all kinds of workshops about, unfortunately, it used to be, you know, again, when I worked for a state association, we did workshops on how to get rid of them, right? How to get rid of your crazy bad teachers. And the truth is that we almost can't do that anymore for multiple different reasons. And we want to spend more time at trying to rehabilitate them. And, instead of trying to move them out the door so quickly, and that one's a really tough one because it does really depend on where you're at. I think that having an open and honest discussion with those teachers and letting them know your strengths and your weaknesses and simply asking them, how can they help? Right? So I think that there's a presentation out there about how to deal with the difficult people. And one of the lessons that they throw out there is difficult people don't know they're difficult because nobody's ever told them. And so being able to tell that teacher, you are making you are making it difficult for us to fulfill our mission and our vision and our goals, and how I want to utilize your strengths, not your weaknesses.
Awesome. Thank you. We have one last question here from John. He asks, how can you help principals help teachers reduce the workload or reduce stress?
Yeah. This one is tough too. You got to find a way to make work more fun. And that goes back to that service excellence piece. And I'm probably talking about this because of my location in Disney, but Disney has an amazing book out about the 10 lessons from the mouse. And it talks about, you know, not every job is fun and some jobs are really stressful. And we as human capital leaders and as principals have to find ways to reduce stress. And that can be through those thank yous, you know, the recognition programs. Maybe it is just hiring somebody to come in and do some massage tables every semester, you know, the littlest things. But what I'm trying to reiterate is that those things seem so little and so minute to us. And we're like, no, we're talking about the big picture of massive workload and stress for teachers. And hey, I know that's a huge topic, but take little tiny bites of that. And part of those little tiny bites can be even just a thank you, you know, a plate of cookies, a massage therapist, a workshop, a speaker, bring in a speaker, have your PTA bring in a speaker about, reducing stress, about doing breathing exercises. And the more little pieces you can chew off of that, the smaller that big topic of teacher workload and teacher stress becomes. I think we want to tackle the big problem, but really and truly, we need to just take little tiny bites out of it first.
Great. Great information shared. I mean, I learned a lot today, and I hope my listeners learned as well. On behalf of NAESP, we'd like to thank you, Kelly, for that presentation and this webinar series of Webinar Wednesdays. I want to thank my partner behind the scenes, Arna Feedy, as well as our associate executive director, Gail Morgan, and our executive of NAESP, Executive Director Dr. Earl Franks. My name is Aaron Lurie. I'm the Director of Professional Learning here at NAESP. Make sure you catch our next Webinar Wednesdays next month, coming to you soon. Thanks again, Kelly, and have a good day. Bye-bye.